Our next speaker is Fairchild Ruggles.
Chairman Kennedy, members of the Board of Trustees, President Easter, Chancellor Wise, I'm grateful for the opportunity to speak about a subject of concern on the UIUC campus, academic freedom. The AAUP statement on academic freedom affirms that institutions of higher education are conducted for the common good and not to further the interest of the institution, and that the common good depends upon the free search for truth and its free exposition. On campus, academic freedom provides the opportunity for people to say things that appear unpopular or are difficult. We cannot limit speech or frame the classroom so as to exclude a lifestyle that we don't like. We cannot or should not decide what is acceptable based on who pays the salary of the teacher. The principle of academic freedom must rise above those particular interests. Now, this is easy to say, but it can be difficult to enact. In practice, we are challenged not by the lofty ideals, but their specific application on the ground. To quote the great scholar Terence Ranger, academic freedom is something to exercise, not something to claim. Yet UIUC faces a serious challenge to the principle of academic freedom because our unit heads are now being told whom they can or cannot hire, the criterion being prior criminal record, even though we have successfully hired such criminals, such individuals, with fully disclosed records in the past, and they have won awards for teaching specifically about incarceration. But recently, someone decided that such people are unfit to teach, that they remain forever unrehabilitated. On campus, do we have a clear policy that states which people may be rehabilitated after incarceration and which cannot? And who will decide that? Shall we add new categories to those who cannot, should not teach? Women were once excluded as both teachers and students in universities. In Nazi Germany, Jews were banned from public office and university teaching. In the United States, communists were persecuted by the House Un-American Activities Committee. But what categories of exclusion shall we adopt today? Which pasts shall we brand unredeemable? And how shall we, unblemished ourselves, judge them? I volunteer at a state prison where most of my students were members of gangs. In seeking education, they want to become contributing members of society. They want to make amends for the terrible pain they caused in the past. In their journeys toward enlightenment, they have much to teach the communities that spawned them. My students are thoughtful, caring men, but shall we exclude them from university educations and teaching because, as former gang members, they once systematically terrorized their communities? When we choose to exclude some people as outside the realm of acceptability, shall we also make a policy that guides how we teach about the unacceptability of women, Jews, political dissidents, and the incarcerated? Will that policy now guide how we teach about crime and redemption? Shall we adhere to the new UIUC policy that apparently has determined that redemption belongs to some, but not to others? In teaching about incarceration, shall we include in our new policy the statement that no one with actual experience in prison will be allowed to teach about it? In teaching about the violence of the 1960s, the violence of war, race riots, and radical, even criminal political action, shall we have a policy that excludes all of the people who once engaged in that violence? Or shall we only exclude some? And are you planning to make that decision for us? And will you also guide our curriculum, helping us to select the right speakers and books so that we do not in any way suggest redemption for the wrong people? I ask you to reflect. In this process of exclusion, this process of intervention in campus hiring and teaching, at what point have the lofty ideals of academic freedom been shattered on the rock of actual practice? Let me close with the case of a great man who was once labeled a terrorist, Nelson Mandela. A communist and a militant, he was convicted of trying to overthrow the apartheid government of South Africa and served 27 years in prison. Yet he then led his country from apartheid to a new era of not only freedom, but peace and reconciliation. And for this, he won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1992. But in 2014, Mandela would not be allowed to teach on the UIUC campus. In consideration of this, I ask the Board of Trustees to defend academic freedom as a concept and to have the courage to also defend its practice. Thank you.
Thank you.
May I respond?
Sure.
I think there's one thing that's very important at an academic institution is that we think clearly and speak clearly and talk about what the issues are. I agree wholeheartedly that one of the important issues we have to deal with as a society and as a university, and I speak in my own capacity, I don't speak for any other trustee, is how to deal with the issue of a substantial part of our population having criminal records. If someone attended the meetings we talked about a background check policy, at least from my point of view, we should never have a policy that says someone who has a criminal record can't work at the university. Not only are there lots of people who have gone, committed crimes, been convicted, paid their debt to society, not only should we allow them to work at the university, there are many situations in which we ought to encourage that. Because the issue of how to deal with a repopulation that's gone through prison and tries to reintegrate society is a vexing one. However, as much as I have advocated for that in the past, even in my government role, I think there's the hard part is to figure out where there are limits. There are places where you should not put people with criminal records in situations that might expose people to danger. You can think of various situations. And so the hard part becomes drawing a line where the rubber hits the road. When is it a good and positive thing to bring someone into the university system, whether as faculty or as any other employee, and when you draw the lines? And to me, that is an important question, and one we're wrestling with, and one we're coming up with a policy. That, to me, is a different question than academic freedom. And academic freedom is a very important principle. But as I've always understood it, academic freedom is making sure that people who do teach at the university are free to teach what they'd like and say what they'd like without repercussions. And so 30 years ago, 40 years ago, it may have been difficult for people to talk about civil rights and gay rights, and we wanted people to speak up. The hard issues in academic freedom is when people start teaching things that people might find offensive, might find discriminatory, might find anti-Semitic, might find homophobic. And people will wrestle with that. But the issues of whether or not to employ someone who has a criminal background is not, to me, an academic freedom issue. Those decisions are made based upon whether conduct, not speech in the past, is something that we can look at and say this is an appropriate hiring decision. I don't see anyone saying that we ever want to step in and talk about whether or not people should be reemployed based upon speech or teaching in the classroom. And to take a very serious issue, which is what to do with people who have criminal backgrounds and how to apply a policy and apply it fairly, and to call that an academic freedom issue, to me, is not, I don't think, accurate. And I think it does the university and this board a disservice to phrase it that way. And I think the issue that says we can't do any of it, to me, shared governance is an important value. I don't think as a trustee I should ever step in and say this person should be hired over that person to teach humanities or engineering or law or medicine. I'm not qualified to do that. But there are times when we have to step up and say we have policies and draw lines as to who or who should not be employed. And if we agree, that's shared governance. If we disagree as the trustees of this university and as the stewards of the citizens and taxpayers of this state, then we have to act. And so I don't think shared governance means abdication, where we just say anything that people want to do in the faculty, we ordinarily endorse. I'm hoping we agree 99.99% of the time. But I don't think we ought to view the fact that the Board of Trustees wants to adopt a policy to look at issues of how to deal with this issue of people with criminal backgrounds and convictions in the past, not as a policy of excluding them all, but as setting out a balance, is something we should shy away from or apologize from doing. And I wholeheartedly want to embrace that issue. And if issues come before us in particular cases, then we need to be fair. We need to be rigorous in how we approach the facts and our policies. We need to be transparent and we need to be honest. But I don't think that process ought to be cast as any assault on academic freedom, because I think that would be unfair. Thanks.
Thank you. I appreciate those comments. You know, a key role that we provide is to represent the people of the state of Illinois and create policy for the university. Another critical role is hiring staff, hiring president, hiring the chancellors and the executive team that runs the university. And I think as we've done, I think we've attracted great people to those roles, And I think the issue before us is in their hands at this point. We'll let their process run. But I think it's important to continue to defend where we're coming from if our meaning is confused in the public domain. So I appreciate those comments.